The Sensible Celebration, read by Doreen Hepburn.
As soon as she had planned the little gathering, Lorna felt better. She had written to them all, four couples, their best friends. Nothing tacky like a printed invitation, but a warm handwritten note saying that they would have a sensible celebration to mark the passing of the last 10 years. With all the nonsense and ballyhoo there was bound to be, Lorna thought that her little celebration would be the one they would all talk about, look back on and remember. How like Lorna and George, they would say, to have a sensible celebration. Nothing over the top like poor Anne and Kevin did with their theme party, which nobody understood. And then Brian and Hilda had done that frightfully worthy party where they asked everyone to give money for starving children of Ethiopia, which had been a bit of a downer since it had made them a bit uneasy about approaching the buffet supper that Hilda had been slaving over all week. And then, of course, there had been that awful time. You couldn't call it a party, really. That evening when Teddy and Lola said, "Let's play the truth game," and almost everyone had been lured into the most unwise revelations, and almost everyone had ended up very hurt. That had been such a foolish thing to do. Lorna remembered Anne's face when Kevin had said that she was no fun anymore. She remembered how Jim had gone a dull shade of red when Doris had said that, truthfully, she had always expected him to be a success in life and might not have married him had she known how often he was going to be passed over at work. Lorna and George had been very quiet after that party. It was a year ago. They had driven home in near silence. She had managed to turn all the questions into little jokes and answer them with a loving pat on the knee to her husband. George had done the same. But in the car, there had been nothing to say. The emptiness seemed to hang between them like a curtain. Lorna had always told herself that she and George had escaped unscathed from that silly, silly party that Lola and Teddy had been mad enough to dream up. The others had all endured public humiliation. George and Lorna may have been a little more silent and withdrawn at home than they were already, but at least in the view of their friends, they were still what they had always been, a very well-suited couple. In fact, they had weathered the decade very well, Lorna thought. No terrible high-flying brought down by the whims of a stock exchange, as had been the case with Kevin and Anne. Well might Kevin complain that Anne was no fun these days. It can't have been fun to have had so many lovely things repossessed. Such a change in lifestyle. And then, of course, they had been luckier far than Doris and Jim. Doris should never have said it, of course, but Jim was a bit of a plodder, always satisfied with the very lowest position in the office, the cheapest car, the really awful furniture and decor. Jim never seemed to notice that all the others had gone far ahead of him. It would have been somehow more acceptable, Lorna thought, if he had been just a little bit apologetic about things, acknowledged somehow that he hadn't climbed as far up the tree as the others. And Lorna often told herself that even though her George was very silent, no one could deny that it was better far than all the prattle that Teddy and Lola went on with. If George and Lorna were silent, perhaps it was because they had everything said by now. It was normal for people who were in their early 40s and the late 80s to keep their views to themselves. It wasn't like the silly 60s when people had been talking about love and flowers and hippies, nor the 70s when they had all been working so hard. Long, long hours at the office in order to get noticed and get on, And then when they did relax, they'd all drunk far too much. The 80s had meant that they had taken care of themselves, at least. Not so many long, happy chats with George across a dinner table, of course. No snuggling up with a snack to watch television together. To be strictly honest, and even to be a teeny bit selfish, Lorna did rather miss those times when they had so much to talk about. In those times, the days were just not long enough to say all that had to be said. They tumbled over the words, and they had never known a silence. Still, Lorna would always give herself a shake when her thoughts went down that kind of road. It was deeply silly to get worried about little things like long silences. After all, look at what all the others had to put up with. And really and truly, one could only measure one's life by comparing it with everyone else's. Lorna had asked George what he had thought about the party. "Yeah, fine, if you like," was what he had said. "Just our friends. And I think we'll call it a sensible celebration," she had said, waiting for his nod of approval. "Why?" he had asked. "To let them know what it's going to be like," Lorna had said, surprised. "Oh," George said. She made list after list of what they would eat. Soup was rather ordinary, and it did encourage the feeble of spirit to overdose on crunchy French bread. Avocados were so predictable and simply chock-a-block with calories for those who counted such things, which was anyone with a brain these days. Lorna patted her neat little rump and wondered how so many of their friends had let themselves go. All one needed was a little discipline and some practical good sense. Lorna always said that one owed it to oneself to keep oneself looking well. She glanced once more to reassure herself about the success of her efforts. In the mirror, she saw the troubled face of her husband, no longer buried in his newspaper, but looking at her. Not admiringly, as she looked at herself. The only word to describe the expression on George's face was sad. He looked as if something very, very sad had happened. The years of self-control had taught Lorna a lot, she believed. She certainly knew not to rush into questions she might regret later. She pretended she hadn't seen the look on George's face, the look of an unhappy man. She must get him more involved, Lorna decided. That's what the look showed her. He wasn't sad. He was just a little left out. How could George be sad? He had everything he could possibly want. A happy marriage, a beautiful home, two successful children, a wife who looked after herself. Kevin, Jim, Brian and Teddy didn't return home in the evening to perfectly run homes. They spent time chopping logs and carrying in coal, even cleaning grates. George had never known the need to do that. Lorna had seen that all fireplaces were tiled up immediately and tasteful arrangements of dried flowers placed in front of where they used to be. So Lorna didn't meet George's eye in the mirror. Instead, she walked purposefully back to the sofa where George sat. Lorna had read in a magazine once that loving couples didn't have chairs. They always had small sofas instead. More cuddly, the article had said. For years now, they had been sitting on separate sofas. George with his newspapers, Lorna with her books on entertaining etiquette and lifestyles of the rich and famous. This time, She squeezed in beside him. "We have been lucky, George, haven't we?" she said. Slightly startled, George moved to make room for her and said, "Yes. Oh, yes." "No, I mean it. We've had everything, and so many of our friends, well, really, most of our friends, have had nothing. It's only right we should try and share what we have with them by having a party like this. But I want you to help me. Help me to do it right. Make it sensitive as well as sensible." He had that look again, the one she had seen in the mirror. "Lorna, dear," he said, as if speaking to a very slow learner. "Dear, dear Lorna, you're talking about our friends. You're not talking about four couples in some kind of case study called Tragedy of the 80s. They'll love to come and sit down and eat and drink anything with us and talk, like friends do. You don't have to talk about being sensitive and sensible, as if they were all some kind of victims." His voice was affectionate, and Lorna noticed with a rising sense of annoyance, also rather patronizing, as if he were putting her down. "Well, it comes to the same thing, darling, doesn't it?" she said in a silky voice. "That's how you see our friends. Over 20 years and longer, that's how you've always thought of them." "Not all the time, George. Oh, come on, you know as well as I do that life hasn't treated all of them very well. They didn't exactly come through the last decade, well, unscathed, did they?" George had stood up and moved away from the sofa which the magazine article had said would show they were a family that was into cuddles. He stood at the mantelpiece which had never known a fire. He looked across at his wife, who was dressed immaculately, even though they weren't going out. Lorna looked up at him, that upwards glance she had practiced so long and so often. She saw something in his face that she didn't want to read, something that said that she, Lorna, was the one who had fallen victim to the 80s. For a long time he said nothing. When she could stand it no longer, she asked, "What are you thinking about?" It was a question she didn't normally ask. Lorna knew from experience that men were rarely thinking of anything, but at least to put the ball in his court, he would have to say something. "I was thinking about the farmyard years ago when I was a boy, and how the cock would come out and crow. And he always managed to find something high to stand on, where people could see him crowing and know what he was doing. I was wondering what part of the house we could use for it." He didn't look at her. He went and got his hat and coat. She knew he would come back again later in the evening. He wasn't a man for grand gestures, and she knew he wouldn't mention it again, and that she would be big-hearted enough to forgive him, unlike the other wives, who would have made unmerciful scenes over it all. But she also knew, which was most important of all, that he wouldn't go and cry on the shoulders of Kevin or Teddy or Jim or Brian, so that when the day of the party came, there would be no chink in the armour, and no one would ever know about this silly little nonsense that in less wise hands could have become an incident.